Weigh in on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line at 504-260-1870. Bobby and Christian back here on Sports Talk. The hearing in the Senate committee continues surrounding LSU. Holds their third hearing on how LSU handled misconduct allegations. Joining us now, WWL.com contributor Jeff Palermo. Jeff, where do we stand right now as this has gone on for the third time in the hearing in the Senate? Jeff, you there?
Sorry, Christian, you were breaking up. I didn't hear your question.
What's the highlight? What's been the highlights so far in this third hearing on how LSU handled misconduct allegations?
Well, as expected, there were no LSU employees at today's meeting. So the only individual representing LSU at the meeting was Winston DeQuir, who's LSU's legal counsel through this. And so he spent the first part of the meeting explaining why Ed Orgeron, Scott Woodward, and other LSU officials, like current board members and former board members, were not present at the meeting, discussing the fact that he didn't feel it was the prudent thing to do for them to talk about this situation in public now that there is a major lawsuit that has been filed by one of LSU's employees claiming that there was a conspiracy to cover up sexual misconduct by former LSU coach Les Miles. And some of the lawmakers expressed their displeasure to Winston DeQuir that none of the Ed Orgeron or Scott Woodward were not there. And those two made their decisions to not be there before that lawsuit or news of that lawsuit ever came out. But today's meeting was fairly low key compared to the two previous meetings. Of course, the last one featured the dramatic testimony of Gloria Scott discussing what happened to her back in December of 2017 when she was working as a security guard at the Superdome and claimed she was sexually harassed by Darius Geist, the former Tigers running back, who allegedly made lewd comments towards her. And then in the first meeting, that was the first time that lawmakers were really grilling Tom Galligan and others, the interim president, and current board members about their handling of these previous misconduct cases. And again, in all three of the meetings, we've heard lawmakers wonder and ask the question, why has no one been fired from LSU because of this? And then this afternoon, Governor John Bel Edwards was asked that same question, and he believes that the disciplinary actions that LSU has taken so far, which resulted in the multi-week suspensions for Miriam Seeger and Virge Osberry, he called them reasonable, and that the people that needed to be fired are no longer working here. Obviously alluding to F. King Alexander, Joe Oliva, those two in particular, and Les Miles, who has really figured prominently in this whole thing. And so that's kind of where we're at. It doesn't seem like LSU is going to be firing anyone anytime soon. We have a huge lawsuit that's been filed against the university, and we have lawmakers going into a legislative session on Monday where LSU is obviously looking for money to build a new library. And, well, lawmakers may say, well, you might not deserve that library by the way you've handled your business in the past. So, obviously, the story's not going away. It's going to be front-page news here for a while.
Hey, Jeff, speaking for a while, I heard it might be like a 2 or 3 year process. That, you know, when you get lawyers involved, you have depositions and all that, and all the people involved, that it's not going to, okay, it's going to go away in a few months. It might be almost like a 2 or 3 year process.
Well, if you look at, let's take the Alden Sterling case here in Baton Rouge. Of course, he was the black man in 2016 who was fatally shot after an encounter with a couple of white Baton Rouge police officers. His civil case is still ongoing.
Whoa.
I mean, that was 2016, and here we are in 2021, and there's been no resolution to that. I can't imagine there's going to be any resolution to this Sharon Lewis lawsuit anytime soon, especially considering how many people are named as defendants and how it really just kind of takes a it almost takes a machine gun approach, right? It's just
right.
It's firing off on everyone. for how she has been treated here over the last several years. Now, LSU released a statement today regarding that from Winston DeQuir, saying they're basically disappointed that a 20-year employee would, as they claim, would take advantage of a situation here and now seek a huge dollar figure as far as a settlement for some of the things that have occurred to her. And they point out in their statement that Sharon Lewis has received numerous promotions during her time at LSU, but they don't talk about pay raises, which is one of the things that she claims in the lawsuit, that she was denied pay raises while everybody else in the football office was receiving them.
Jeff, how come there haven't been any, or do you think there will be, any criminal charges against Les Miles or anybody in this case? Will it end up that way? I don't know the statute of limitations, et cetera.
Well, that's a good question on the statute of limitations. So all this happened in 2013, and so we're in 2021 now. So the statute of limitations has kind of run out on this. And when they investigated it, the law firm that LSU has and still has, and I don't know if will in the future, that's Taylor Porter, at that time, when they investigated, they did not find that Les Miles did anything criminally. So, and it's also kind of, it amazes me, I guess is probably the best way, is that Sharon Lewis and Les Miles, you know, based on the lawsuit that Sharon Lewis filed, obviously they had a very rocky relationship. And based on the lawsuit that she's filed, a lot of it's centered around the type of woman that Les Miles wanted to help as far as recruiting workers. Basically, LSU and probably every other school that's a major college in college football has a recruiting staff that, you know, they send letters to kids and they do a lot of the grunt work. And part of that responsibility is also that when kids come on and make official visits on campus, they'll show these kids around campus, and it's a, and if it happens to be a female, that's kind of, that female will show that football player around along with the rest of their family. And Les Miles wanted prettier girls, blonde girls, or lightly skinned black girls, and she didn't. And that's kind of where a lot of the friction was between Les Miles and Sharon Lewis and other members of the athletic department. To me, when you think about that, guys, I mean, just how silly that is. I mean, it's crazy, and that's...
Well, it's the Mad Hatter. It's the Mad Hatter, Jeff. What do you expect? I mean, he thought he could maybe be in Wonderland and mess around with Alice, and you can't do that.
Well, I agree. Now, granted, the Darius Guy stuff, the allegations we've heard with that are much more serious than that, but, I mean, that is what we're looking at here for Les Miles, and you're right. Apparently, he was trying to use these women as an opportunity to... you know, have a little playtime, according to some of the reports that we've seen.
And Les Miles, but that to me right there, Les Miles, he's not the most handsome individual. I'm not handsome, but he's not. But he, like, it's a power grab. You know, when you have power and you think you control people, that's what the public said. You got to be kidding me. With Les Miles involved in.
Let me jump in here real quick. I'm not, by no means am I taking up for Les Miles, but the very notion that there are pretty girls on these visits with these recruits echoes on all around the country in almost every college football program.
But you can't exploit that.
I agree. I'm just telling you, it's not shocking that's a possibility. It's just not.
Well, where obviously it crosses the line is where Les Miles, then he tries to make his advances on these.
To hook up. He's trying to hook up at the condo, so allegedly.
Yeah.
Come on. You can't have your cake and eat it, too. I want you to recruit, but I want you also to help me out. Come on.
Yeah. Now, we don't, and we've never heard of reports of other coaches doing something like that. I mean, Bobby Petrino, he messed around with a secretary, but this was obviously, when it comes to female student workers, that's where Les Miles crossed the line.
Jeff,
if these reports are true.
Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist. Jeff, what, I know I'm asking a lot here, but give me worst case and best case scenario for LSU and what you when we see an end to this.
Well, I don't know. Best case scenario, that's hard to say. I mean, a lot of damage has been done. I don't, this is obviously been really rough on the university. I think it's rough on, obviously, the sexual assault victims. It's bad for them. I don't know where you get a how you come out of a best case scenario on this. I do get the feeling that it is kind of hard to move on when you do still have a lot of the same characters remaining in place and talking about Virge Ausberry and Marion Seeger. And maybe it comes down to where Scott Woodward eventually looks at this and says, you know what, Virge, Scott Woodward and even Governor Edwards today, when he was asked about it as well, talking about, in particular, Scott Woodward talking about Virge Ausberry being a good employee and a good person. And, he's well-respected among media members before this. Maybe that's changed now. I mean, I think Virge has had a very good name in the LSU community, the Baton Rouge community. But maybe Scott Woodward eventually looks at this and says, you know what, we really can't move forward if we continue to have these individuals still here. And he may have to make a decision and say, hey, I know Virge and Marion, you guys did what you could, but I think we need to move in a different direction. I think that would help take a little pressure off, and then you wouldn't see state lawmakers holding legislative hearings every couple of weeks wondering what the heck happened back in 2017 and in 2013.
Now, Jeff, with that being said, you know, who you trying to hold accountable? And the big money donors, you know, the Board of Supervisors, if I'm stating that correctly, can they be held accountable? You know, they could be outstanding businessmen in the community, and then they have a lot of stroke because they're on that board, and, you know, they donate a lot to LSU. What's going to come about with that? I mean, is it kind of like, well, why would I get involved with this in the future to help the university and my donations if I'm going to be caught between a rock and a hard place?
Well, I can tell you, we spoke to a board member today, Louisiana Radio Network, and LSU board supervisor members have been they haven't really spoken to the media. In fact, I think this is like the first interview we've been able to do with one in several years. They've kind of stayed very quiet, and they just let whatever they do at the board meetings kind of speak for themselves, I guess, if you would. But Lee Mallett, an LSU Board of Supervisors member out of Lake Charles, talked to me today about how they are now being very engaged with what's going on. One of the big mistakes here, and there's been a lot of mistakes that LSU did, is when they did the investigation into Les Miles in 13, the law firm that LSU has had since the 1930s, Taylor Porter told them, let's not tell everybody about this. So, you know, F. King Alexander knew about it. The board president knew about it. Maybe the athletic committee chairman of the LSU Board of Supervisors knew about it.
Joe Oliva.
They're a public state school. That's a terrible approach.
So several board members knew nothing about it. And the Hush Blackwell report states that. And so that was a huge mistake. And Lee Mallett, a current LSU Board of Supervisors member, says just based on that, he feels that LSU should start find a new law firm to represent him, because that was a very bad look. And obviously that's a sign of a cover-up, right? I mean, you're trying to not let some information out like that could have helped LSU avoid the problems that they're having right now.
Well, you know, Jeff, to me, you can enlighten me. When I hear RICO, what do you think when you hear the lawsuit coming about now, RICO? Isn't that kind of like mafia? You know, when you hear RICO, you know, you understand what all comes about with that? I mean, I was like, what?
Yeah, it's basically, you know, she's claiming that she's been obviously retaliated against, that she tried to speak up, and claims there's a conspiracy among the LSU hierarchy to not really investigate sexual misconduct claims, especially involving the former football coach. I think the number that is being discussed by her attorneys is what amazes me, or is eye-popping. $20. I mean, George Floyd just settled for $23 million, or his family just settled for $23 million with Minneapolis, and he's dead. Sharon Lewis is still alive, and she's seeking $50 million. I mean, that gives you an idea of just how serious and crazy the situation has gotten for LSU.
WWL.com columnist Jeff Palermo. Bobby, got anything else for Jeff?
Yes. Now, you know, because where are we at right now going forward, dealing with Coach O? Now, Coach O's expected, my understanding, today, didn't he send a letter instead of testifying live before the Legislative Senate Select Committee of Women and Children? How does that work, whether you truly have to testify or you can send a letter? And that's your statement.
Well, see, here's where the committee made a mistake. They said that if you can't appear before the committee, it's okay to send a letter. Well, and that's something that they've kind of done during COVID. So when they sent out the invitation to these law to Scott Woodward and Ed Orgeron to speak to them, they left that in there. So they kind of, you know, I know they're upset that they didn't come and testify today, but they gave them that opportunity. So
right.
One thing they can do is they can subpoena them, and that's still a possibility. Now, even if Ed Orgeron and Scott Woodward do show up or are forced to show up under a subpoena, I can't imagine that they're really going to say anything. I mean, Winston DeQuire would be there with them, the counsel for LSU, and any question that – I mean, they may just say the same thing over and over again. I mean, at this point, now that you got this lawsuit – closes the door on any LSU official saying any more about this at this point. But they could try. They'll need to get the courts to agree to the subpoena because they are not a I'll go a little inside baseball with you as far as the state capitol works. Because they're not a standing committee, meaning like they're not the Senate Education Committee, the Senate Finance Committee. They're kind of a specialized committee. They have to get the courts, the 19th JDC, the judicial court in Baton Rouge, to sign off on a subpoena. And the other thing is lawmakers are going into their session on Monday, and so they're going to start to be tied up with that, and other issues are going to come up. So I don't know if that subpoena will ever come. It might. Just when you kind of think that this story may fade away, it explodes again. And it certainly has exploded again this week, after Gloria Scott's testimony a week ago.
And, you know,
2 weeks ago.
And, you know, Jeff, a number of times you see, even from a congressional standpoint, nationwide, you look that you hear individuals say, I cannot recall or yeah. I don't remember. How can you truly judge someone if they say they don't remember? I mean, you know, that might be some. Well, are you trying to just get around what actually you know or don't know? But you hear that all the time. I cannot recall. I cannot remember. To me, the one bad thing with Gloria Scott, now she was trying to get all the help she can have, was when she had the youth basketball coach, Cleveland Williams, tax LSU for money over the Geis incident. Now, she said, no, I wanted him to help me. I didn't want him to ask for money, but then all of a sudden you got a $100,000 figure that Ms. Scott would go public with her story if the university did not pay her $100,000 or withhold guys from the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah, and that's now they continue to say that, you know, Scott, Gloria Scott, and those that are representing her, that doesn't that apparently occurs a lot in sexual misconduct cases where the victim is seeking some sort of compensation for the situation to go away or not to go to the media with it. That is something that is very common, but it doesn't look good because a lot of these, when Gloria Scott made that, the troubling, when she gave that troubling testimony, and it really is gut-wrenching to hear it, you know, a lot of the lawmakers said, well, why would she lie about this? This
right.
is a God-fearing person. This is, you know, she's just doing her job. And you think she's coming off as someone that is, you know, just stating her story and finally getting it out to the public. And then a week later, you hear about this. It does take away from it a little bit. But I think one of the mistakes that LSU made is not getting on the same page on this, because when Gloria Scott's comment came, or when she made her testimony, LSU released a statement that Ed Orgeron never had any contact with Gloria Scott. Now, Gloria Scott claims she did speak to Coach Ed Orgeron. And then the story kind of changed a little bit the next time around. Ed Orgeron said, I don't recall. So it's right. Kind of, you could say it's semantics, but it is two different statements. And now, in the written statement that Ed Orgeron provided to the committee, he does admit having conversation with somebody connected to Scott, Gloria Scott. But he says that it wasn't. It just maybe would have been better if they were up front. But I don't think LSU was ready at the moment to come out and say, right after Gloria Scott made this, after her testimony, that there was a payment. I don't think LSU was trying to be very sensitive to the situation. But once that part got out, LSU was ready and willing to release the audio recordings of Cleavon Williams asking for money.
Now, Jeff, along those lines, when you look, you're representing the victim or the defense and all that, that if you look at it in any event, so to speak, experts who represent sexual harassment victims say that demands for money in the wake of harassment are common, like you said, expected, and do not diminish the credibility of a victim's testimony.
Yeah, and a lot of people have said that. And, you know, based on what we know regarding Darius Geis, what may have happened in December of 2017 at the Superdome, it's Gloria Scott, she may well have been telling the truth to the state lawmakers back, I think that was March 26th when she made those, when she gave that testimony. I mean, as far as what we know with Darius Geis and the allegations that have been made against him and multiple, it's hard to sit here and say that that story was not true. And if Ellis, but is it, it's hard to say, guys. I mean, there's a lot of he said, she said. I don't know how this really, I don't know if we ever really get to the truth of what happened. We do not hear. What's kind of interesting during all of this is that we have not heard like a statement from Darius Geis's attorney saying, hey, all these allegations that are being made about me are completely false.
Right.
You know, we're hearing it from Les Miles's attorney, but we're not hearing it from Darius Geis's, which I don't know. Maybe it's that might be telling in itself.
Jeff, we got to run. I appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right. This is Sports Talk here on WWL.